For me, as a young person, I would like a future. You know, every generation has its major challenge, but what my generation is facing is pretty crazy.
Climate change. I'm really concerned about the fact that our government isn't stepping up more and making drastic changes.
If I'm going to complain about who's in there, I want to have a say in who goes in there.
We all ought to stick together to make good things happen instead of fighting against each other. Nothing happens when you're fighting against each other.
Voters in Maine, Massachusetts, and Vermont went to the polls yesterday with big issues on their minds. I'm John Dankosky.
I'm Jane Lindholm.
And I'm Jennifer Rooks. And this hour, we'll hear from people about what really matters to them and their communities.
It's an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. And it's right after this news.
My community is doing fine. The country I'm worried about.
Healthcare. You know, so many people in this country don't have healthcare or have healthcare that's just gouging their pockets.
Student debt. I'm hoping whoever becomes president will remove that. That's something that I have to deal with, and so many of my friends. If we could just have that removed, it would help us tremendously.
I've seen the economic upturns and downturns of America, and I don't think we're very safe right now under the billionaire class.
Poverty, the gap between the rich and the poor.
Everybody got so much hate in them, and then, you know, you can run a country on hate.
I think that we've become really divided, and I think that the work of community leaders is going to be to try to find a way to bring us back together.
Do you think you'll be one of those guys?
That's my job.
This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. The voices you just heard from Maine, Massachusetts, and Vermont are just a few of the millions of people who voted on Super Tuesday in 14 states. Now, this hour and throughout this year, we're going to be listening to people from our communities as they tell us about the issues that most affect their lives. Among those issues, the ones we heard a lot about in the days leading up to Super Tuesday, the economy, healthcare, climate change, and immigration. I'm John Dankosky. I'm at New England Public Radio in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Jane Lindholm of Vermont Public Radio and Jennifer Rooks of Maine Public Radio. Jane and Jennifer, it's good to be here with you.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, John. Nice to be with you.
Hi, Jane. Hi, John. You too.
Well, before we dive into all of these issues and hear all these voters' voices, let's talk through some actual results from Super Tuesday. And there are a lot of interesting results over the course of the last few hours even. But Jane, let's start with Vermont.
Okay. So in Vermont, as expected, Bernie Sanders won handily. There was not really any question about whether or not Bernie Sanders would win his home state. He remains a very popular senator here. And our VPR Vermont PBS poll showed him winning with a majority of the vote. But interestingly, John and Jennifer, he had a much smaller percentage of the overall vote in the Democratic primary this year than he earned in 2016. In 2016, he had 86% of the vote to Hillary Clinton's 14%. And this year, as I mentioned, he had just over 50%. So Joe Biden came in second with about 22%. Warren was third, Bloomberg fourth. And what that means in terms of delegates is that Sanders does not get all of Vermont's pledged delegates. He'll get 10, and Biden will get 5. And that could make a difference as the delegate race continues. Now, you know, while so much of the focus has been on the Democratic race, let's not forget there was, of course, a Republican primary contest as well. In Vermont, about four times as many people voted in the Democratic primary as the Republican primary. But in the GOP contest, Trump won about 90% of the vote to Bill Weld's 10%. And that's even with Weld visiting Vermont, meeting with the state's Republican Governor Phil Scott last week. Last night, Trump supporters did a little honk and wave outside of the Bernie Sanders rally in Essex Junction. And let's listen to Thee Knight. Thee is a Burlington resident and one of the two dozen or so Trump supporters who turned out, and she's critical of Sanders.
He wants to give free things to everybody, which is just taking money from some people and giving it to others. And plus, he's never really run any big thing. He's run for office all these years, but putting things into practicality, I do not see evidence of that.
You know, so Thea Knight is a Trump supporter, but I think just to wrap things up, John, what we're seeing here is a little bit of a softening of support, perhaps, for Senator Sanders in his home state, although Vermont is a reliably blue state when it comes to presidential politics, and there is every expectation that that will hold true in November.
Oh, okay. So, Jennifer, what about Maine? What happened there?
Well, John and Jane, it has been a very close race in Maine between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, with about 90% of the vote counted. It appears that Joe Biden has a slight edge over Bernie Sanders in Maine. This goes against what the polls were showing beforehand. And despite the fact that Biden did not have a campaign operation in Maine, and Bernie Sanders did. Also, Sanders won Maine 4 years ago, John.
Yeah, you know, it's a bit of a surprise there. And I think maybe the biggest surprise of the entire evening was in Massachusetts. We've spent a long time wondering if Senator Elizabeth Warren would carry her home state or if Bernie Sanders of Vermont would win. Well, both of them were beaten by Joe Biden, who won a large majority of the towns across the Commonwealth, including Boston and also Springfield. These are both places where Bernie Sanders just held big rallies the other day. Warren won her hometown of Cambridge, but not a whole lot else. All of this is a surprise because in polling just a week ago from WBUR, Biden was in fifth place, far behind, in single digits. It is important to note that by far the largest numbers of voters in Mass are unenrolled in either party, but they're able to vote in the primary. So it seems that Biden kind of appealed to unaffiliated voters as well as a lot in the Democratic establishment. You know, here in Massachusetts, other than the presidential primary, though, we didn't have a whole lot else going on. But in Vermont, Jane, it was not only Super Tuesday, but it's also town meeting day. And this is a big deal in Vermont. Maybe you can tell people who don't know much about it.
Yeah, this is a really big deal in Vermont. It's an annual tradition that goes back to the 1600s. And Vermont has really held fast to this concept of direct democracy and local control. And so the first Tuesday in March is the official town meeting day in the state. It's not actually a state holiday for everybody, but it is for government workers. And many people do take time off of work to be able to participate in their town's town meeting, where residents vote on municipal issues. We elect our local leaders. We often pass resolutions on everything from climate change to, this year, a few towns were considering the concept of being a Second Amendment sanctuary town, which was intended to oppose further state or federal restrictions on firearms. And the way this works, John, is some towns hold a floor vote and conduct all the business in a typical town meeting style, complete with a big shared lunch. And Tuesday is the traditional day for that. But over the years, in order to encourage more participation, some towns hold meetings on the Saturday before or on Monday evening before Tuesday. And other towns do everything by Australian ballot, where you just pick up your ballot and fill it out the same as you would for the presidential primary. And some towns like mine have a combination where some of the items are voted on a floor vote, like town maintenance budget or a referendum on a local issue, and some, like the school budget or a big bond vote, would be by Australian or secret ballot. And, you know, it's worth noting, John, I just want to point out that this is sort of seen as a quaint tradition or played as a quaint tradition in some national stories. And it absolutely can be seen that way. I mean, potluck lunches, people doing knitting while they listen to the moderator, it is quaint. But it's also a really serious way for people in Vermont communities to come together to talk about how much we can afford to pay in property taxes for the things we need. You know, a new plow truck costs a lot of money for a town. And so this is a place where a community's values really edge up against the fiscal realities we face.
Yeah, and it's interesting when it comes up against the presidential primary, too, local and national issues. What were some of the big issues this year, Jane?
School budgets are always one of the biggest areas of focus on town meeting day, since they make up the bulk of the property tax burden that landowners face, but also because schools are so important to the fabric of communities. And Vermont is struggling with the same demographic crisis we see in some other New England states, where our student population has been dropping. And it's a big issue in recent years to determine whether all of our state's small schools can and should remain open, or if some of them will need to consolidate. So, John, the majority of school budgets always pass, but there are some towns that really struggle. And this year, one of those is the Harwood Unified Union School District budget. That was a $39.7 million budget voted down. And the primary issue is not one of money, it's one of school consolidation. So if the budget had been approved, middle school students in a couple of the schools' towns would have moved to different schools, so in the district's towns. So obviously a lot more to be done in that community area as they try to figure out what to do with schools. Can I name a couple others as well, John?
Yeah, real quickly. Yeah.
Here's an anachronistic one. Maidstone, Vermont voted to no longer be a dry town. You will be able to buy alcohol in that town, although there's no plan for a liquor store. But people wanted to be able to, you know, mail order wine. Reliable cell and internet service, a big issue in Vermont. 25 towns in the Northeast Kingdom passed votes to form a broadband communications district to try to consolidate to get high-speed internet. And in non-presidential party politics, the Progressive Party now has an outright majority on the city council in Burlington.
Wow. So Vermont voters had a lot on their minds, and a lot of the minds of Maine voters, too. Jennifer, what else were you voting for there yesterday?
Well, that's right, John and Jane. In Maine, there was a referendum question, that was referred to here in Maine. We refer to it as a people's veto when this kind of question comes on the ballot. This one had to do with vaccination exemptions for students. Last year, the Maine legislature had tightened the law so that parents and students could no longer claim a philosophical or religious exemption from vaccinations. Well, question one would have reversed the law and put those exemptions back in. It was defeated resoundingly by a 3-1 margin. Voters told us it was a big reason they came to the polls yesterday. Well, here with me now, Steve Missler, Chief Political Correspondent and State House Bureau Chief for Maine Public. Steve, thanks for being here. You know, Steve, turnout was higher here in Maine than predicted. By how much? Was it because of this question one, the vaccination exemption question, or because of the presidential primary?
Well, it could have been both, really, Jennifer. I mean, we did see more people come out and vote for the referendum, but that may also be because we have a closed primary here. And so, you know, you actually have to register as a Democrat or a Republican to vote in the presidential primary. And election officials predicted about 15 to 20% turnout, but it certainly looks a lot higher than that, especially in some of the state's liberal strongholds. We don't have final numbers yet, but election officials say they planned for 60% turnout. That's how they formulate how they're going to turn, you know, how many ballots they're going to distribute to towns and municipalities. Yet there were places that ran out of ballots, which created some long lines in some precincts and slowed the count in others. We've also heard reports that there were a number of unenrolled voters who registered to vote in the Democratic primary. And that really seemed to be foreshadowed by a statewide poll that was released last week. That poll had 27% of unenrolled respondents saying they plan to register as Democrats so they could vote in the primary. And we don't have the registration data yet to determine whether Super Tuesday's registration tracked with that poll result, but we certainly heard from election clerks that it was happening with some regularity.
Steve, do you think question one affected the outcome of the primary vote or vice versa?
I don't know if we can make that a definitive determination either way on the data we have, but I think you can make the argument that the Democratic primary really handed question one a steeper defeat than it otherwise would have had the referendum been in November, for example. We also know that so far 160,000 more votes were cast for question one than there were in the presidential primary. And again, that could be just because the primary is a closed election, while anyone can vote in the referendum. And as for Joe Biden's upset performance here, I really think you can attribute that to a coalescing of moderate voters that we saw in all of the Super Tuesday states after his commanding victory in South Carolina over the weekend. After that contest, we've seen something really extraordinary, which is that Biden's moderate rivals have dropped out and endorsed him. That appears to have sent a signal to moderate voters here in Maine, especially, who voted late and decided late, and they may have been ambivalent about whether to support him or even voting at all. But that signal, that coalescing of support among moderates, really gave them the green light to go out and vote, and they may not have done that otherwise.
That's also interesting. Thanks so much, Steve Missler, Chief Political Correspondent. John?
Thanks so much, Jennifer. Right after our break, we're going to hear from voters on the issue that kept coming up in all of our conversations as we met with people across Maine, Vermont, Massachusetts, on our talk shows leading up to it. People kept talking about the economy. But what exactly is the economy? Is it just what's happening in your backyard? Is it other people's economy? We're going to be trying to find answers to some of those questions as we hear voters' voices on an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm John Dankosky with Jane Lindholm and Jennifer Rooks. We caught up with voters in the days leading up to and on Super Tuesday, but one issue that came up over and over again was the economy. There are, however, a lot of things that go into what the economy is. Now, Jane, you did a recent VPR Vermont PBS poll that asked registered Vermont voters, what's the most important problem facing Vermont today? What do they say?
You know, you're right on it. It's the economy. The economy, jobs, and the cost of living. 30% of our respondents, over 600 respondents, said that was the most important problem facing Vermont today. Here's Morrisville, Vermont resident John Gloss, one Vermonter who's concerned about the economy, and he said it's actually motivating him to vote this year.
I think it's going to tank. I think we're going to have a very serious depression in this country because of the Federal Reserve.
Well, we heard a lot of different voices, Jane. A lot of voters we talked to cited income inequality as the key issue. A lot of people are concerned more about how the economy is affecting other people than themselves. Here's a voice from Christopher Dyack. He's in Cambridge, Mass.
Systemic structural wealth inequality built into our very neighborhoods. This neighborhood is a good example of that. My apartment costs $1,800 a month, and it's in a basement. That's more than my parents' house in Vermont. I think that's insane.
Yeah, and housing prices are pretty high in Vermont, too.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of wealth inequality and access to affordable housing is important in booming places like Greater Boston and more rural places like Vermont, but also in cities with bigger economic challenges like Springfield. I want to welcome in Elizabeth Romano, a reporter from Springfield Republican, who talks to a lot of voters in the community. Welcome to our show, Liz.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So talk about Springfield and the surrounding economy. This is really one of the big issues here.
Yeah, so Springfield has had a boom. Obviously, we had MGM coming in a couple years ago. We also have CRRC, the railway company, and they are hiring. They're definitely hiring. They're looking for workers. The problem seems to be that there's not necessarily enough skilled workers to fill the jobs that they are looking for.
Not enough skilled workers. So it's a booming time. Not enough skilled workers. What are people doing about that?
I think a lot of, particularly at the higher education level, so community colleges are partnering with the city to offer workshops, not only on it preparing them in terms of manufacturing skills, but soft skills seem to be an issue as well. So learning how to write a resume, how to do an interview, showing up on time for work, things that people are just not used to doing in some cases. So it's a new experience for them. And because of that, companies like MGM are having trouble with retention. So they keep filling the same jobs that they are, you know, they're trying to fill 3,000. They're at about 2,000 right now because people keep quitting because they're just not ready for the work environment.
Do people that you talk to in Springfield feel a part of this boom? Because I remember when the MGM casino was coming here, I talked to a lot of people who said, yeah, maybe this is going to bring new jobs here, but maybe they're not jobs that are going to benefit me at all. Are people feeling a boom across the board?
I mean, I think they are. I think there is a lot of excitement about it. It's more about not feeling prepared to take on those jobs. That's really where, even though I think MGM tried to prep in advance and have, you know, people take courses on how to do gaming and all of that, it's still a process of just getting people accustomed to that sort of job environment, full-time positions and positions with particular skill sets. So, but yeah, I do think that people feel like there's a move or a shift in Springfield towards a positive, kind of like a boom.
Well, what about this feeling of wealth inequality? I mean, this really shows up in cities that have had problems like Springfield or Holyoke all across Massachusetts. Is that an issue that comes up a lot when you talk to people?
Absolutely. I just did a story about how Latinos with degrees, bachelor's degrees, are earning less than their non-Latino counterparts. So even when you have the same skill sets, it's still a struggle. And obviously, Springfield has a huge Latino population, about 40% in the last census. So when you're looking at, yeah, we're getting the same jobs or we're able to get employment, but we're not being compensated equally. And I say we because I'm Puerto Rican, but in general, I mean, then that is an issue.
I actually want to bring up another issue that's important to the large Puerto Rican population here in Springfield and in Holyoke. Let's hear the voice of Bridget Crusets. She talked to our reporter Nancy Cohen in Holyoke yesterday.
Being Puerto Rican and seeing how the whole Maria thing was handled, I think a lot of people, especially in this community, have been very aware of the news and have family there, are like, you know, very worried about, I mean, with climate change, things are always just going to keep getting more difficult with the weather and more dangerous.
You know, Liz, we're going to be talking more about climate change in just a little bit, but talk about the impact that both the Hurricane Maria and then this recent series of earthquakes, the impact that that's had on this community here.
Oh, absolutely. You had thousands, literally thousands of new students coming into the Springfield and Holyoke public schools. They did go to Lawrence. They did go to Boston as well. But Springfield and Holyoke are known for being communities that take a lot of Puerto Rican migrants. So they come back and forth from the island. As you know, they are U.S. citizens, so it's very easy to come back and forth. So that was a huge, huge impact on the school system. There was also a huge impact on resources, particularly housing. A lot of them, I did stories with families from Maria living in hotels for over a year before they were able to get temporary housing. Some of them are now still struggling to get permanent housing. So it's definitely an issue. And then the earthquakes just, it didn't bring as much of a boom. I think we were expecting more people to show up. It doesn't seem to have been as big of an issue. I think people are prepared after having had such a huge natural catastrophe to sort of survive and want to stay on the island, especially because they don't necessarily feel welcome here. Like the voter just said, Trump's dialogue hasn't always been particularly positive about the Puerto Rican community.
Well, we just have a little bit less than a minute, but talk about that political reality. I mean, we've heard a lot about Puerto Rican folks moving from the island to, say, Central Florida in Orlando and making a big difference politically. Do you start to see that here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look right now, our city council has several Puerto Rican members on it. So does our Springfield School Committee. We've got some running for legislative positions. Representative Carlos Gonzalez, Jose Tesado have been in the legislature for quite a few years. Our Register of Deeds is Puerto Rican. Our election commissioner is also Puerto Rican. So, yeah, we're making an impact.
Elizabeth Roman covers Springfield and the surrounding area for the Springfield Republican newspaper. Great to see you, Liz. Thanks so much for being
here. Thank
you. Jennifer?
Hi, John. Voters here in Maine told us that the economy and income inequality is a big issue for them as well. They are worried about the plight of the middle class and working poor and the lack of good-paying jobs. You know, affordable housing came up again and again as an issue, and this is an issue that looks different in different parts of Maine. For example, in many rural areas, there are just very few affordable housing options for seniors. And remember, Maine's the oldest state in the nation. In other places, like the greater Portland area, home prices and rents have just skyrocketed. Let's listen to voters Ruby Wallace Ewing from Biddeford and Tom McMillan from Portland.
For me, you know, I'm also a college-educated woman, and I can barely make ends meet. I'm in so much debt, and I, you know, I live in an apartment that's maybe not in the best part of town, and I, you know, try my best, but it's still just, like, really hard. I want to buy a house, but I can't. I want to, you know, be able to have a family, but that scares me, and yeah.
I think the number one issue in Portland is the housing affordability crisis and the lack of affordable housing here, and how people in Vermont and Massachusetts and New York and Connecticut and elsewhere are coming up here and they're building hotels for them, but there isn't enough housing for the people who live here and work here, and it's absurdly expensive what exists. The people in power, many of them are landlords or work for real estate companies that are involved in directly profiting from it, and they're more interested in enriching themselves and their clients instead of the public good. A lot of politicians in Portland and elsewhere who have their hands tied to development, and regular people are really suffering from that.
And of course, John and Jane, what we're hearing from voters is that issues like affordable housing and income inequality go hand in hand with other big issues here in Maine and throughout New England, including homelessness and opioid epidemic. John.
Yeah. Another issue on a lot of voters' minds, Jennifer, this year happens to be one of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' signature issues, of course, Medicare for all. Talk about that, Jane.
Yeah, you know, and it does go hand in hand with the economy, because if you're concerned about how to pay for your health care, you know, that has a big impact on your buying power, on what jobs you need to consider, and how you're going to support your family. Joseph Pensack lives in Burlington, Vermont, and he sees health care as one of the key issues facing the whole country.
I see so many examples of people unnecessarily either becoming bankrupt or put in serious financial straits because of a medical condition they had no control over. So it just feels like as a culture, as a society, we should be supporting a social safety net.
And that impacts how people vote. Arunima Dasgupta works for the multinational microchip manufacturer Global Foundries, which has a big fabrication operation in Essex Junction, Vermont, where Arunima lives. Arunima actually became a U.S. citizen in 2019 and voted for the first time yesterday for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. And that question of health care is a big issue for her. So, Arunima Dasgupta, I'd love to talk with you about this for a few minutes. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jane. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I want to know what it felt like to vote yesterday for your first time as an American citizen.
Oh, my God. It was exhilarating, to say the least. And yes, and I was very excited to vote for Bernie Sanders. I have been following him and campaigning for him. I campaigned for him in 2016 as well. But this year, I wanted to become a citizen to be able to, you know, have my voice heard as a citizen and participate in the American election process.
And what made you want to support Bernie Sanders?
Oh, well, a lot of his issues align with my concerns. But the biggest concern that I had was with Medicare for All. I completely resonate the idea of healthcare is a human right, something that Bernie says all the time. But the thing that really comes down to is, you know, I work for a multinational company, and the company pays for so much of our healthcare, for our insurance. And then we have to pay for insurance as well. You know, we have to pay some of it as well. And even with all that, every year, if I do a lab test or my kids break an arm because they are in sports or something happens, I am still having to pay, you know, an insurmountable amount of money for all this. And think of it this way, that I have a good job. I have a health care that's provided by my employer. Now, if you take somebody who doesn't have that privilege, it's even worse. When it comes to Medicare for All, it makes it much easier for everyone. And I know there's a concern about, hey, how are we going to pay for it? But there's a complete understanding of how that gets paid. And what happens in the end is that everybody gets healthcare and is not dependent on having to work for an employer in order to have healthcare. Because I'm always scared. If I lose my job, my first concern is my health insurance goes. Then what happens?
Yeah.
How do I pay my bill?
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's one of the reasons why you're supporting Bernie Sanders. Why not Elizabeth Warren, who also supported pretty big changes in how our healthcare system works?
Because, again, for Bernie, it's a very, very simple solution. The solution is something that actually works. It works in other countries. I recently was in the UK just traveling around for the coronavirus case that's going on everywhere. They have they have these simple places that somebody can go. If you are just take your fingerprints or your ID or whatever, you do a quick swab and you find out whether you have the virus or not. It's the same case with South Korea. We don't have that in the U.S. and I don't think Elizabeth Warren's plan, which is a mishmash, is going to work. We have to go to Medicare for All in order to provide health care for everyone in America, just like every other developed nation does it.
So, Arunima, you know, yesterday was your first time voting as a U.S. citizen. I understand you also went to the Bernie Sanders rally in Essex Junction last night. Can you describe what the scene felt like there?
It was exciting. The energy was so great. It was very positive. You know, the one thing I will say over the last 1 year, what happened was we always heard that, you know, Biden is going to be the front runner and all that. And then Bernie started to surge. And of course, with whatever happened in the last 2 days, things changed a bit. But if you ask me, I think Bernie did great yesterday. All the delegates, I mean, it doesn't matter when you know, win a state or not, how many delegates did you get? And everywhere in all the different areas, if you look at all the states, we've come in either first or second, and we've been able to get a lot of delegates. So you could see that energy yesterday as the polls were coming out, and when Jane Sanders came on stage, and then Faiz, and then finally Bernie. It was exhilarating again.
Yeah, you know, Arunima, I'd love to hear a little bit more about why you made the decision to become a citizen now. And I understand voting was actually a big part of that decision, given that you've lived in the U.S. for, you know, 20 years or so. And so you've seen a lot of different periods in the U.S. economy, in U.S. politics. And what feels different to you in 2020?
I see how the country. So I came into America, Jane, because I love the freedom of this country. I came here as a student, and I decided to stay back. And America gives you the freedom that nobody else does. And I love America. I would not change anything. That was my feeling. And I always thought, you know, a green card got me everywhere. I really didn't need to become a citizen, especially mm-hmm. because I also was, I'm an Indian citizen. And once you become a U.S. citizen, you have to give up your Indian passport. So, but then what happened with Trump in the White House is things started getting very, very polarized. I could see in 2016 the polarization, something we see in India right now, as well with Modi in power. And I don't want, I love this country, and I know if somebody can show the world that we can do this effectively, it is the U.S. They can show it, and that's why I stand behind my progressive movements with Bernie Sanders, and I know that we will be able to bring the country together and defeat Trump in 2020.
Well, certainly an interesting time and interesting intersections between U.S. politics and Indian politics. So I appreciate that perspective. Arunima Dasgupta lives in Essex Junction, Vermont. She became a U.S. citizen in 2019 and voted for the first time on Super Tuesday yesterday. Arunima, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you. Thanks, Jean, for having me on the show.
John?
Yeah, I was going to quickly go to Jennifer Rooks in Maine and see if you might want to pick up on that conversation.
Sure, John. You know, it's interesting here in Maine. The conversation isn't as much about Medicare for all specifically as it is healthcare generally. We're going to hear from Patrick Denger here, a voter we met in Biddeford.
Healthcare is very important to me because I'm in a wheelchair. I have a disability that, and I really need healthcare to basically survive. So that's what's really important to me. I live a very normal life. But that's only because of the healthcare I get, and I want it to stay as good as it can be so I can continue to live as much of a normal life as anybody else can.
And I'm still here with Steve Missler, our chief political correspondent. And Steve, sort of this tenuousness, this fearfulness of even if I have healthcare, I might not continue to have healthcare seems to be the undercurrent.
Yeah, it is. And politically, it's been a boon for Democrats. If you go back to the 2018 midterms, Democrats ran on health care. That helped them take back the state house here. They obviously helped them take the House of Representatives and the U.S. House of Representatives. And they're going to try to do that exact same thing. They've been pushing bills in the Maine legislature that they can use and campaign on and to help retain their majorities in the Maine legislature. And I would expect that you're going to see that as an issue in some high-profile congressional races here, too.
All right, Steve. John Dankowski.
Yeah, Jennifer, thank you so much. Now, right after our break, we're going to hear from voters on climate change and on immigration. You're listening to an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. We'll be right back. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm John Dankowski in Massachusetts with Jane Lynn Holm in Vermont and Jennifer Rooks in Maine. When we talked to voters, a lot expressed concern about climate change. It really does impact everybody, but Jennifer, because Maine's economy is so tied to that long coastline, it's a really big issue there.
That's right. You know, John, during the last election 2 years ago, we asked listeners to email in their questions for the candidates when we had a debate. More questions came in about climate change than any other single topic. And we found that again yesterday that voters at the polls had climate change on their minds because, as you mentioned, our state really relies on its natural resources such as forestry and fishing. And the Gulf of Maine is also warming at one of the fastest rates in the world. Here's Courtney Enos Robertson from Kittery and Lori Austell from Portland.
Well, I mean, we live in a coastal city. I mean, if someone's going to be affected by climate change, it's going to be the seacoast. You know, I've thought about moving to different locations because I'm worried about what's going to happen here in the next two decades.
Honestly, I think the climate crisis for all of our communities, for the whole universe is, or at least our planet, is really the critical thing. We can't make anything else right if we don't have
good water and our planet functioning like it should.
Jane Lindholm.
Yeah, interesting to hear voices there from Maine, and certainly the coastline in Maine, a really big issue. But water quality affects all of us, and the agricultural economy are things that Vermonters really pay a lot of attention to when Vermonters are thinking about the effects of climate change. Andrew Peterson is the owner of Peterson Quality Malt in Charlotte, Vermont. And Andrew's going to join us now to talk a little bit about how that works from his perspective. Andrew, nice to talk with you again.
Good morning, Jane.
So describe your business and why climate change and your own income and your own business and your own ideology are all tied up together.
Absolutely. So we're part of this new 21st century ag movement. For us, it's primarily grain. We're growing grains in Vermont, malting them locally for local brewers and distillers to use. A lot of that ties into the local foods movement that we've seen so strongly in New England, it's really cutting down on, you know, carbon footprints. You know, where is your food being produced, and how far is it traveling to get to your table?
So, Andrew, what is it that you're hoping to see in a president when it comes to addressing climate change?
Well, it's really frustrating for me to see that climate change has become as political as it is. I don't think it should be political at all. We shouldn't be having the discussion about whether or not it's actually happening. Instead, I really think we need somebody in there who's saying we need to pour research dollars into universities to figure out what the effects are and how do we mitigate this. Agriculture is inherently going to produce a lot of greenhouse gases, and unless as a country we're going to completely change the way we consume food, which I don't think we are, we need to figure out better solutions. I think, you know, most farmers you talk to want to be good stewards of the land. We spend a lot of time and energy figuring out what are the latest methodology for, you know, cultivation and handling water runoff and things like that. So we're trying to figure that out and make it all work.
So given that, Andrew, you voted in the Democratic primary yesterday. Who did you vote for?
I voted for Elizabeth Warren.
She didn't fare so well in yesterday's contests. Where do you go from here now after that vote? Are you still a Warren supporter, hoping she'll stay in? As we are live here, we haven't heard of her dropping out. So what do you think next?
Well, I think realistically, it seems like, based on the national results yesterday, she probably doesn't have much of a chance. It's unfortunate for me. I've been a really big fan of hers. I think that she would be a remarkable president. Certainly I'm going to support whoever the Democratic nominee is, but I definitely feel like a person without a party right now. I'm frustrated with this kind of career politicians who will be in their 80s by the time their term ended. I'm looking for younger leadership. You know, I realize that Senator Warren isn't that much younger, but she's got a few years younger than Biden and Sanders. I've been a longtime supporter of Sanders, but I think his time has passed, and I wish he would turn the reins over to the next generation, and let's get some new blood in there. I really miss the campaigning of Obama at this point.
Andrew, in the absence of action at the federal level, what do you hope to see around New England in our region in terms of really working hard to combat climate change?
Well, there's any number of things we can do. You know, I mentioned cultivation. So there's been a lot of movement towards no-till, a lot of discussion about carbon sequestration. I mean, the idea that we can actually work with the university extensions to figure out better ways not only to produce fewer greenhouse gases, but to actually potentially do things that can be beneficial and helpful in combating climate change.
That's Andrew Peterson of Peterson Quality Malt, the owner of that in Charlotte, Vermont. Andrew, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Finally, we're going to get to one last issue that is on the minds of a lot of voters this year. It's immigration. Let's actually hear from John O'Donohue. He's from Rochester, Massachusetts. He's an independent voter who did vote in the Democratic primary and plans to vote for a Democrat again in November.
Unless you're a Wampanoag or an Apache or a Navajo, we're all immigrants. My ancestors were immigrants, and their drive, talent, and diversity of experience pretty much is what has driven the success of this country.
I want to bring into the conversation Helena Da Silva Hughes. She's executive director of the Immigrants Assistance Center, which is based in New Bedford, Massachusetts. She joins us by phone. Helena, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for inviting me.
So we're talking with voters and people who talk with a lot of voters about the issues that are most on their mind. You are in the immigration business and you are dealing with people every single day. What are the things that people are telling you? What are the things that you care about the most right now?
I definitely think what's most important for me is immigration and immigration reform that unfortunately has been used as a political football both by the Democrats and the Republicans. And so that is basically under this present administration, we know how immigration has been such a hot topic and how immigrants have been basically been such a scapegoat of this anti-immigrant sentiment that is going on in the United States. And to me, I just see it on the daily basis of how it impacts all this negativity that is happening. One of the things that I do want to mention that is positive is the amount of people who had green cards for many, many years and thought that that was enough until this present administration, that people realize that having a green card is not sufficient to help them against immigration policy. So we have seen an increase of 336% increase of citizenship applications since 2016. And we know that they've also, you know, the registration to vote. So we know that they will definitely have made an impact in these elections. And so that is something that is very positive. But I do definitely feel that we need some kind of immigration reform bill, because these 12 million or even more undocumented or mixed immigration status families that exist in the United States, they are stuck into a system that we need an immigration reform in order to have them come out and basically start in a process for legalization, which is what an immigration reform is. It's a path. It's not an amnesty, but at least we definitely need to have that. And until we have that, this immigration will always be used as a political football.
Well, and there's a few things in there. There's the political football piece of it. There's the anti-immigrant sentiment. And then there's also anti-immigrant policies. As you talk about people with green cards now increasingly, and that's a big number, Helena, applying for citizenship, that has an awful lot to do with some recent changes, too, in which the Trump administration is trying to make it harder for people who are here legally with green cards to actually get federal benefits. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think what happened is the green card, the people with the green cards, that what he's trying to do right now is basically, or even people who will be eligible for a green card in recent years, is that this public charge that just came into effect on February 24th, what basically says is that if you live on a mixed immigration family, which means maybe the parents have no status but the children are U.S. born, once those children grow older, that 21, they can apply for their parents to get a green card. Okay, the problem is that if they've used any public benefits, they're considered a public charge. And so a lot of times they're utilizing some of these benefits in order to meet the basic needs of their children who are U.S. born, because they're not. And so that automatically, this public charge rule that just came into effect on February 24th is just another. It's just another barrier that this population is facing. And that to me is very scary, because what happens is if they start withdrawing from these benefits that they're receiving to meet the basic needs of their children, then what's going to happen, especially then the school is going to get involved and realize that maybe these children are being neglected or malnutrition because the parents have dropped out because they were afraid that they're never going to be able to get a green card. And so to me, that is really, it's very, very scary. Everything that I have seen, I've been doing this for 37 years. Mm-hmm. I've been running the organization since 1996. And I myself was an immigrant who also got a green card and became a U.S. citizen. So to me is that we are actually what we're talking at a national level. We are dealing it here right at the Immigrants Assistance Center. And to me, it is very concerned because we are seeing the anxiety that is happening with these families and the children in the schools who are going into the schools and telling the teachers that they're afraid that parents are going, they're not going to be home and the parents are going to get deported.
Yeah.
Well, that's not an immigrant issue. That's an issue that impacts everyone because these children are born in the United States. And to me, that is where the trauma really takes into effect of these children. And to me, that is a huge concern. And I really feel that we need leadership that is really going to embrace the diversity of this country.
Elena, I just have 30 seconds with you there, but do you feel like you have allies outside of the community that you work in most closely? You work in immigration rights, but are you hearing from an awful lot of people who aren't in the same world you're in who are willing to step forward and and work with you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I have to say that we've never had so many people come forward right after the elections in 2016 and basically said, what can I do to help you?
Hmm.
So we have been so fortunate to the point that we're expanding our office to the second floor of our building. So we're going from 1,000 square feet to 3,000 square feet.
Wow.
So a lot of people have come forward that are very concerned and want to help us. So that is extremely positive.
Helena Da Silva Hughes is Executive Director of Immigrants Assistance Center in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jane and Jennifer, I'd love to hear how this is being talked about in Maine and Vermont right now.
Well, this is Jennifer. Maine, you know, has a growing immigrant community, especially in the Portland area, in the Lewiston-Auburn area. And immigration has emerged as a campaign issue, especially on the Republican side in prior elections. But, you know, John and Jane, we don't really have any polling data for this primary election around this issue. And to be honest, it was not the leading issue for any of the voters we talked to at the polls yesterday. Now, I'm thinking this may reflect that many Democratic primary voters would have articulated their feelings about immigration differently. They would have just maybe articulated it as being anti-Trump and everything that he stands for, including immigration. Would you agree with that, Steve?
Yeah, I think there's some outrage over the Trump administration's immigration policy among Democratic voters. But I think they also are wary of talking about it a lot here. We've seen it blow up in their faces when we had Governor Paul LePage, who made that an issue during his reelection bid in 2014. And I think there's some reluctance among some Democratic primary voters to elevate that issue for themselves because they're worried that that plays into a strength of the president and his sort of nationalist rhetoric.
That's really interesting to hear. You know, it's an issue in Vermont as well, especially as Vermont thinks about demographic trends and the desire to boost our population of younger people. Our governor talked about it in his State of the State address, saying Vermont is open to all kinds of immigration. And Vermont has been impacted by federal refugee resettlement policy as well. But it's also something that Vermonters do talk about in their communities. Jim Earle lives in Hardwick, Vermont, and he said he's concerned about the impact immigration is having on both his community and the country.
It's not our community and country anymore. We have people coming over, you know, the refugees and whatnot. We don't say prayer in school anymore. We are giving too much away for other people.
So Jim Earle seeing a downside to immigration, but we also heard from Asma Alhouni, a community organizer in Hartford, Vermont. She moved to the U.S. from Libya as a child, and she said immigration is also driving her voting choices this year.
I think as a Muslim woman raising in the United States, one of the things I need people to understand is that we're not here to take jobs away, that we're human beings who want everything else everyone else wants. We want to be safe. We want to thrive. We want to be healthy. We want our children to succeed. And we're not here with an agenda. We just want to live like everyone else.
So, you know, lots of different perspectives here in Vermont and I'm sure around the country, John.
Yeah. And Jane and Jennifer, you both host daily talk shows, and you're talking with people all the time. Just very quickly, Jennifer, maybe you can say, do you expect that these same issues are going to be the issues coming up throughout the year as you talk to voters around Maine?
Oh, absolutely. I think these will be the same issues. And, you know, I'm just going to throw one more in there, and that is a lot of people really concerned about keeping young people in Maine and attracting other people, other young people to this state. I know that's an issue for you as well, Jane, in Vermont.
It is an issue, and I think one of the things that's coming up in statewide politics a lot that could also be seen in the presidential politics is childcare. Childcare, affordable, high-quality childcare and early education is a real big one here in Vermont.
Jane Lindholm of Vermont Edition, Jennifer Rooks of Maine Calling. Thank you both so much for joining me this hour.
You're welcome. Thanks for being with us.
It was my pleasure, John.
Our coordinating producer for our special is Lydia Brown. We received production assistance from Cindy Hahn and Sam Hudzik. Digital support came from Heather Brandon, Elodie Reed, Andrew Catalina, and Joe Amon. Huge thanks to the staffs of all three of our stations, Maine Public Radio, Vermont Public Radio, and New England Public Radio. Also, WCAI and WGBH for getting out there and talking to voters for us. The executive editor of the New England News Collaborative is Vanessa De La Torre. Listen for more America Amplified conversations throughout this coming year. I'm John Dankosky. Thanks so much for joining us.